the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this May 24th, 2018, Thursday. You know, I find it kind of interesting, in their total hatred for President Trump, the establishment political figures, as well as the media, as well as social media, as they go over the top attacking him, what is happening is having a blowback effect that I think is actually going to be very, very positive for all of us, not just for President Trump. And of course, we're talking about the Spygate and other things that are more obvious, but this just happened yesterday. We had a judge say that President Trump's Twitter account, his personal Twitter account, not POTUS, you know, there's a POTUS Twitter account, and then there is real Donald Trump, his personal account. And they said he cannot block or even mute people there because it's a public forum, and that denies their free speech, which raises a whole host of questions. First of all, he hasn't done it. So that's the best thing about this. This is what President Trump should have done with the federal judges who said, you can't start enforcing the law. You have to obey the DACA order from Janet Napolitano, the Homeland Security Secretary under Obama. Your Homeland Security Secretary cannot say she's going to no longer defer enforcement of the laws, no longer defer enforcement of the border. No, you're not allowed to do that. And you, as president, can't do that. So we're going to block you on that. And I've said many times, President Trump needs to just say, okay, that's interesting. Thanks for your opinion. Have a nice day. And go his way. Because that's what Andrew Jackson said. Very important to understand that Andrew Jackson, after a Supreme Court decision, said, well, they've made their decision. Let's see them enforce it. And that was the opinion of all of the founders. The people who wrote the Constitution said and as I've said before, the most statist of all the founders, Alexander Hamilton, said the judicial branch of the federal government is the least dangerous. I mean, even Alexander Hamilton saw the creation of the federal government as a great potential danger because of the power that they would try to consolidate. And we've now seen that come true. The worst fears of the founders of our country, the writers of the Constitution, their worst fears about consolidation and usurpation of power have come true. As a matter of fact, they've gone beyond their wildest dream. They never would have imagined the surveillance state that we currently have and the infrastructure that we're currently building for the total control of everything that we do. But they said that, you know, Alexander Hamilton said that the judiciary was the least dangerous because they didn't have any ability to enforce anything unless we bow to them, unless we pretend, as Jeff Sessions does. You know, he's part of the long establishment in Washington for the 20th century that just bowed everything that the courts have said, even if there's no law involved. There was no law involved with DACA. Nothing changed. Nothing changed in the law. Nothing changed at the border. So that's a good piece of news. The other thing that is interesting about it, I think, is it has big issues for our free speech. The first thing I thought about when I read this was the way free speech is attacked at political conventions, but it also has big implications for the way Twitter and Facebook and Google are censoring our free speech. If the president of the United States is not allowed to shadow ban people, then why is the president of Twitter or of Google or of Facebook, why are they allowed to have that kind of power that even the president of the United States is not allowed to have? Kind of like the same question is, why do these federal judges have more power than the president of the United States? So we're going to be taking a look at that. And we'll also be taking a look at a new lawsuit that has come out in Canada about the MK Ultra program. Victims and family members of victims. This may shed light on one of the darkest practices of our beloved CIA. Wouldn't that be interesting? And you'll, as we talk about this, you'll see some amazing parallels as to what is now currently being done. Not necessarily with LSD. Oh, and by the way, LSD was being used by the guys who are running the missile defense program. Several of them just went to prison for it. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with that? We'll be right back.
real news. Live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this May 24th, 2018. I'm David Knight. And we're going to take a look at how the blue wave is collapsing, and the media is not talking about this. And I can't really understand what's possibly going wrong with this, right? We got Nancy Pelosi out there calling tax cuts crumbs. We have a business owner pushing back on that. We have President Trump in New York yesterday. We're going to have some clips of that talking about MS-13. You know, Nancy Pelosi was defending MS-13 when President Trump called them animals. And of course, the mainstream media deliberately misconstrued those statements. And then you've got the New York governor, as he's in New York talking about this, you've got the governor of New York giving voting rights to about 24,000 convicts who've been paroled. Now, one of these is a cop killer, and not just somebody who got in a shootout with a cop. But yeah, these were people back in the 1970s, a couple of guys. They belonged to a radical black group, kind of like the ones that have targeted police in Dallas and executed them. This is a radical black group in the 1970s. They would set up ambushes for the police. In this particular case, they called in a domestic violence call to the police. The police arrived, and these guys just started sniping at them. They went to jail. One of them got paroled. People were angry about that. And now this parolee is going to get the right to vote. When the Democrats have to embrace MS-13 and cop killers, they're that desperate to win. The blue wave is crashing big time, folks. But of course, you're not going to see the mainstream media talking about this. And another important case came out of, I think it was New York, where this judge is. District Judge Naomi Buchwald. It's Columbia University, so I think it's probably out of a New York court. Anyway, this case, and we'll talk about this first, about the Twitter free speech. I think this is really going to blow back on them big time as well. Let's talk about that. We've got a federal judge yesterday rule that President Trump can't block the accounts of his persistent Twitter trolls, arguing that these individuals have a First Amendment right to view and interact with his real Donald Trump account, not just with the POTUS account, but with his own personal account. So keep that in mind. And this is what the U.S. District Judge, this federal judge, folks, we got to have some reforms of the federal judiciary. These people are never elected, and you can't get rid of them without impeaching them, and that is not an easy process. It needs to be made a lot easier. And we need to have the executive branch understand that they don't have to obey every little whim of the federal judges. And this is a great starting place. But it also has some great establishment blowback, unintended consequences for these people in terms of our free speech as specifically protected under the First Amendment. And our free speech is being destroyed on social media. But let's read what she had to say. She said the viewpoint-based exclusion of the individual plaintiffs from that designated public forum. That's what she calls social media, a designated public forum. Ooh, we've got a judge here who hates Trump, and her hatred blinded her to basically siding with conservatives who are being banned, shadow banned by the president of Twitter, not the president of the United States. So anyway, she says the viewpoint-based exclusion of individual plaintiffs from a designated public forum is prescribed by the First Amendment and cannot be justified by the president's personal First Amendment interests. Now, first thing I thought about with this, honestly, was not the social media. First thing I thought about it was the presidential nominating conventions of the GOP and the Democrats, the DNC. This is a longstanding tradition over many elections, that when we have these nominating conventions and people go there to redress their grievances with government and to exercise their free speech in public with their signs, and I don't care what their signs are saying, and I don't care what their issues are, and I don't care what the political party affiliation is, but what they have done now for several conventions, and both major parties do this, they say, well, we're not going to allow this at the convention. And what they do is they remove the protesters. This is the essence of the First Amendment, folks. They remove these protesters many, many blocks away, and literally put them in a cage. That's happened at the last several conventions that we've had. You're not allowed there. You get moved away. You get put in a cage, literally. And when we do that at the presidential conventions, take the protesters away, put them in a cage, and control their speech that way. It's essentially the same thing we saw at the Bundy Ranch. It even got the Republican governor there upset when the BLM went out and put up a little plastic fence. We got pictures of it when we went out there. Put up a little plastic fence and paid to have a sign professionally printed and hung it on there and said, First Amendment area. And one of the protesters came out with a handwritten sign and put it up next to that one. There you go. There's the First Amendment area. Nobody is using that First Amendment area. They went to another area that was more relevant. And folks, this was out in the middle of a vast wilderness. I mean, this is hours away from Las Vegas. There's nobody out there. Nobody out there except the Bundys and some cows. And so they put up a little thing there and said, this is your First Amendment area. Now, when that happened, the governor blew up. The news media blew up. So this is outrageous. But the best comment was a handwritten sign next to that professional sign that said, the First Amendment is not an area. Well, the First Amendment has been an area at our presidential nominating conventions. That is a shame. There's the handwritten sign. It is a shame. Good job, crew, getting that stuff up quickly. It's a shame to see that happening. And it's something that has bothered me for a very long time. But now, since we allowed that kind of thing to go on at our presidential nominating conventions, is it any surprise that this happens on social media? You know, we know that it is a public forum. We know that they are a de facto monopoly. And now this judge has come in and said that. And this has came out of a lawsuit filed by the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. When I first saw this, the article I saw had Knight First, and then on the next line it had Amendment Institute at Columbia. I thought, well, no relation here, folks, but maybe that's what we should call this program. Having trouble with a name. Maybe we should call it Knight First. Because we're a first program in the morning for InfoWars. Anyway, they're the ones who sued. Columbia University sued for this. Said, we're going to have free speech on Twitter, but only for the president. You know, the rest of you, forget about it. Especially the president's followers. President's followers don't get any free speech, just as trolls. The judge went on to say, this case requires us to consider whether a public official may, consistent with the First Amendment, block a person from his Twitter account in response to the political views that person has expressed, and whether the analysis differs because the public official is president of the United States. The answer to both questions is no. Well, a spokesperson for the Justice Department said, we respectfully disagree with the court's decision, and we're considering our next steps. Don't consider your next steps, and don't respectfully disagree. Disrespectfully disagree with them. Say it's none of your business. You don't have a chance. You don't have any say-so on this. Just ignore the decision. Because what's going to happen is, even though this is something that works to our advantage, that you could say, well, we can now have free speech at political conventions. We can now have free speech on social media. You know that what's going to happen is this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will probably say, we're going to overthrow this because we don't want to have free speech on social media. The government doesn't want to see that happen. And when the judge ruled on this, the judge said, and this also includes, we're not going to make a distinction between blocking people and muting people because the distinctions between those two things, she said, she found to be unpersuasive. She said users can still reply to tweets after they've been muted, even though those replies are never seen, said the ruling. So that means, again, if you want to apply this to the president, not of the United States, but the president of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, you would say that it's not enough. We're not going to let you shadow ban people either. You know, you banned people like Roger Stone, many others. I mean, many, many people have been banned on Twitter, on YouTube and so forth. But you're not going to be allowed to shadow ban them either, because that's what happens when an individual mutes you on the account. And President Trump has not unblocked people like Rosie O'Donnell. She's still gone. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and as we look at the implications of this federal judge telling President Trump that he can't block or mute individuals on his personal Twitter account, and the implications, of course, are that the president of Twitter can't do that to you. We'll see how that works out. But here's some more implications of what is happening as we have the, as Breitbart calls them, they had a conference about this, the masters of the universe. And of course, that would be the social media oligarchs that have been created, I would argue, by the same people who wanted total information awareness, DARPA and the CIA and all these people that were doing their creepy total information awareness. DARPA had their LifeLog project. They shut that down just as Twitter at the same time was being started up. And of course, CIA's got their own venture capital company, Incutel. And if you look at the people with the CIA, Incutel, the people who are the head of DARPA, they're sitting on the boards of these Silicon Valley investors who helped to be, were the venture capital startup individuals for these social media companies. And they've been operating, putting their service out there for free. You know, come on in. Everything's free. You know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. George was right when he came here to InfoWars and said they are setting up a ghetto. And it works the same way as the Warsaw ghetto did for the Jews. You know, just get, hey, come on. We've got a great place for you to live. We'll just put you guys all in this little ghetto. We'll concentrate you here. And then we'll surround you. And then we will start to exterminate you. And that's what's happening to our free speech right now. It's being exterminated. But take a look at what's going on in Ireland. There's a big referendum tomorrow in Ireland on the Eighth Amendment to their constitution. That Eighth Amendment in Ireland provides equal protection for both mothers and their babies. And so as a result, you don't have abortion on demand like you do here in the United States. Now, what does this have to do with Twitter and so forth? Well, you have bans that have been put on advertising by Google. Google just said, we're not going to allow anybody to advertise on either side. Facebook said, we will accept ads, but only if the people placing the ads are in Ireland, because we don't want to have foreigners trying to influence this. As if people in America don't care or don't have an interest in infanticide being conducted in Ireland. Quite frankly, I am interested. I don't like to see babies being killed anywhere. I don't like to see babies being killed in China. I don't like to see babies being killed in Ireland. I don't like seeing babies killed in the in America. I don't like to see our government funding it. But I want to, we're going to take a look at how this is playing out. Because, of course, when they suppress the people who are opposing this, you're only going to hear from the mainstream media and the politicians who universally back abortion and fund it. And that's what's happening. So it's really not an even-handed shutdown, as Google is saying. The people who are trying to push back against this have found some interesting little loopholes. We'll talk about that as well. But first, I want to play for you John McGuirk, who is a spokesperson for the people who are trying to save the Eighth Amendment in Ireland. And he had this to say about how it is going to affect their culture, how it's affected our culture, how it has affected the culture in the UK. Here's John McGuirk.
My reason for voting no changes on any given day, but today it was that I was browsing through the UK abortion statistics for 2016 and I found that 11 babies had lethal injections into their heart in the womb and were delivered dead. And the stated reason was that they had a cleft palate in 2016 in the UK. 141 babies had a lethal injection into the heart and were delivered because they were twins and their parents only wanted one child, not two. One of them, last week in Australia, actually, there was a story about parents who had one twin aborted because the other had a heart defect, and the doctors aborted the wrong one. And you know, the terrifying thing, Matt, is that not that those horrible, horrible, brutal things happened, but that in the UK, they weren't even a news story. Because when you legalize abortion, you change the culture of a country utterly. You change the way we think about life. You change the way that we as a society relate to each other. So that absolutely horrifying things can be done behind closed doors to unborn children who in a couple of weeks' time could be living, breathing human beings.
Okay.
And no one else.
That's exactly right. That is a really, really powerful statement. To think that a child would be aborted, would be murdered, Because they had to give him a lethal injection into the heart of the baby who's inside the mother because they had a cleft palate. Isn't that amazing? You know, when we adopted our child from China, there were a lot of children who were being adopted in our group, special needs. And some of the children had cleft palates. Now, in China, with the one-child policy, you know, there was a lot of, they have, and there was a news article I meant to get to yesterday, and I'll try to get to it today as I talk to China, because there's a lot of China news as well. But let me just summarize it here. I won't go into detail on it. But China, a couple of years ago, changed their one-child policy. They said, all right, we will now allow you to apply to have two children. And now they're saying, well, that was basically a failure. So now we're going to just say we're not going to have any restrictions on the number of children that people can have. They have tens of millions more males than they do females because people have gone through and done selective abortion based on sex in some cases. But in many cases, they didn't have access to the technology to determine the child's sex. And when the baby girl was born, they would give her up to the state. And they would be institutionalized. That's why you have so many people adopting young girls from China out of the United States. And it's why you have this massive imbalance now of male to female in China, which I think is going to, in the long run, I said it when we went there more than a decade ago to adopt my daughter, I said this is going to be fuel to a fire for an already aggressive Chinese communist government to invade other countries. Because when you have an excess of males, that is just a tool that is sitting there for that communist dictator to use in terms of starting wars. But they would also, if they had a child with any kind of a health condition that they were concerned about, they would abandon them. But not necessarily just bash their head against the rocks, which is basically what this is. So this is even a worse policy in the UK, as far as I'm concerned, than what was happening in China, to kill a child because it's got a cleft palate. That's easily fixed in the West. It was not easily fixed in China. You know, the amazing thing about it was that if it was any kind of a medical condition that was going to be very expensive to fix, they would just give up and turn their child over to the state. Hopefully the state would do something about it, or maybe some foreigners would adopt them. So we had a lot of Americans who would step up to the plate and say, I'll take that child, I'll fix their palate, and they'll have a normal life. Why won't the UK do that? They can't afford to do that because of their wonderful medical health care system? You mean that the national health system that they've got won't fix cleft palates? They got to kill the children? That's absolutely amazing to me. But that's what happens. And there is a recognition that the child, and of course half of these children are females as well, right? All you feminists out there, half of these children are female, but there's a recognition in Ireland right now that is hanging by a thread that a child has as much right, the most innocent among us has as much of a right to life as a woman. It is not your body. It is somebody else's body. It happens to be inside yours for a moment.
Information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I was just talking about the upcoming referendum tomorrow in Ireland as to whether or not they're going to get rid of their Eighth Amendment to their constitution that provides equal protection for mother and child, recognizing that there are two lives here at stake. And, of course, the mainstream media and all the politicians are pushing very hard to make sure that this is overturned. They want to be able to have abortion. You just heard the comment from an Irish individual who was talking about what has happened in the UK, saying that some of the other people speaking up, he said, in Britain, a shocking 97% of abortions are performed on healthy babies. And that's what we're being asked to legalize here in Ireland. He had said before that 141 babies were aborted in the UK simply because they were twins and the parents only wanted one baby. See, this is very much like what happened in China. You know, one-child policy. I don't like the... take a look at the DNA. Let's see, what sex is the child? I don't want that. Just kill it. We should be able to pretty soon, with the kind of advancements that they're having in DNA, be able to tell what the hair color is, what the eye color is. It's like, okay, well, all right, that's the sex that I wanted, but yeah, I wanted a baby with a different color hair or different color eyes. So just kill it. Just kill it. We'll try it again. This is how cheaply we're holding human life. And it's yet another example of how cheaply human life is held in the UK. Their much vaunted national health care system. Oh, everybody gets free health care, except for the children with cleft palates, and we'll just kill them. If somebody doesn't, we'd be bothered with that. It's easily rectified, folks. It's easily rectified. But we don't want to spend the money on it. It's cheaper just to kill them. We can give them a little injection into the heart, and it's all taken care of. You know, we had a close friend of ours back in North Carolina. She had twins. And she was older when she was pregnant. They did a test, and they came up with the indication that there was Down syndrome. They couldn't tell at the time if it was one or both. And or, you know, sometimes that comes up, and it's a false positive. She decided to have the children. Anyway, her sister, a feminist, our Christian friend, and her feminist sister, her feminist sister would never speak to her, never spoke to her again till she died. So angry that she would go ahead with this and not abort these children. One of them did have Down syndrome, and the other one was perfectly normal. And I tell you, it was a difficult thing for them with that Down syndrome girl, but she was a real blessing to them at the same time. And they'd be the first ones to tell you that. So we cannot hold life cheaply, hold it to different standards. And you know what? It's interesting that their very famous album, U2 War, the kid that is pictured on the cover there, the angry child that you see there, he's now grown up. He's 44 years old. He's a photographer himself. And of course, that was their album that was their breakthrough album in the United States. U2 has come out in favor of this. The band that has portrayed themselves as a Christian band in so many different cases. And this guy who is the model, he was also the model for their previous 1980 album, which was Boy. So he was the model on two different albums. And he's a Christian, and he came out criticizing this very strongly. He said, I'm horrified, on his Facebook page, I'm horrified to see U2 using their voice to promote something that is so obviously wrong. Shame on them. And then he quotes a verse or two from Proverbs. And what it says that he quotes from is, there are seven things. Seven things that God hates. One of those is a hand that sheds innocent blood. How can you do that? When a government can kill the most helpless among us, it feels that it can kill any of us. You know, we talk about the drone assassination program, where they kill people without having a trial. And of course, that was done against people who were American citizens. Yes, they weren't loyal Americans, but they were technically American citizens. They should have had a trial. And when you allow people like John Brennan and Obama and just the CIA in general to come up with a disposition matrix of people that they want to assassinate, and they're allowed to do that, whether or not they're American citizens, that sets a very dangerous precedent. But you know what? When you allow the government and other individuals to kill tens upon millions of your babies in a country, how do you explain that? You know, and the other part of that is, besides hands that shed innocent blood, it's those who devise wicked plans and a lying tongue. And we're seeing a lot of a lying tongue that is setting up plans, wicked plans, to shed innocent blood. That's what's really going on here. He was spot on when he talked about that. You know, and you got you two out there who's, they've got their song 40, that is supposedly from Psalm 40, refers to some of those lines there. As LifeSite News points out, another song, Drowning Man, could easily be seen as a dying child, dying in the womb. And yet they have absolutely no compassion for this. You know, we all should understand, there's one thing to say that you're a Christian, it's another thing to have a heart of a Christian. have a heart for what God wants. There's a lot of professing Christians, but not too many possessing Christians who possess Christ. But then let's take a look at this, the free speech issues, because that's why I wanted to do this here. How do the internet oligarchs play into this? Well, we had Google just say, we're going to ban all ads, either side. Neither for nor against abortion. We're not going to let anybody advertise it. But essentially, folks, that is a ban of the pro-life point of view. That means that only the point of view of the mainstream media and the politicians will be heard, because no individuals will be allowed to put ads up. And they are universally in favor of abortion. That's the way that is turning out. And then it gets even worse than that. We have universities in Britain. Facebook says, we're not going to allow anybody unless you can prove to us that you are Irish. You're not going to be allowed to purchase any ads about this amendment on Facebook. And yet you've got British universities like Oxford and Cambridge, you know, the usual suspects, the same people kind of behind all the Spygate stuff, right? All these connections to that. But these universities, six at least, are going to be paying students to fly back for the vote. So, you know, if you're attending university in Britain and you're Irish, they're going to pay for your ticket to go back to Ireland so you can vote to kill babies. And one of the universities, Oxford, a couple of them, there's six of them, student unions at Oxford and Nottingham said that they are going to make this available to all Irish students, regardless of how they intend to vote. But at Cambridge, which is where the walrus, Stefan Halper, is from, was involved, at Cambridge, the women's campaign says that they are only going to give the money to people who are going to vote for abortions. So forget about the way they're doing it with Facebook. They're going to, the British universities are going to push these students to go back there because they know they're going to be reliably in favor of abortion. They don't really understand the issues. That's the saddest thing about it. They won't come to a full understanding of this for quite some time. I know how it was. I mean, as a college kid, when Roe v. Wade came out, most of us didn't really understand the full implication of that. There are a lot of Christians who didn't really understand the full implication of it for many decades. It's taken a while for people to get their heads around it. And I think, as my wife was working with pro-life organizations, I told her at the time, I said, you know, the best thing that pro-life organizations could do would be to fund advanced technology in ultrasound imaging, which we now eventually did get. We wound up getting 4D ultrasound, which shows in detail the child and also shows their movement. Because other than that, you only see lifeless fetuses, and you don't get the understanding that it is a true child. You know, National Geographic would go in and use these 4D ultrasounds and say, look at the little baby dogs, look at the little baby whales, and they never do that with humans. They say, look at how much they're like the actual animal. You can even see the hairs and stuff. They don't do that with the humans. Why not? We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to take a look at what's going on in North Korea. We had a CNN crew there as it's reported that they're blowing up tunnels at their nuclear test site. We'll tell you what CNN is reporting here. And we'll also talk about President Trump, what he is saying about auto imports. Very important as we look at what's going on with trade between the U.S. and China. And we'll also take a look at what is happening with the collapsing blue wave. Heard a lot about that, but not too much about it lately because it seems to be that the blue wave has dissipated and it is not a real thing anymore. But of course, the mainstream media is not going to talk about the collapse of the Democrats in the general polls. That was what they were basing their blue wave on. So we're going to get to all that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about some of the products we have InfoWarsStore.com. I almost said RealNews.com. No, it's not RealNews.com. You can find our channel is Real News with David Knight. That's our YouTube channel. But InfoWarsStore.com is where we have the products that we sell that support this program. And we have a new special. We have the Real Red Pill Plus is now 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com, as well as Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. That's 25% off. Bod Ease, our intense turmeric formula, is now also 50% off. Help support your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system today. And DNA Force Plus, 50% off. Massive savings on that. Very expensive product to produce. You can take a look at the 170 clinical studies, more than that, actually, but it's over 170 clinical studies about the key ingredient there that makes it so expensive, BioPQQ. You know, we've had articles in the last several months talking about the importance of DNA health. One of them, just a couple of months ago, how heavy snorers can age faster. It says that it damages your DNA. So there's a lot of things that can damage your DNA. They found an enzyme that they said, if we can inhibit this enzyme, then we can stop the damaging of the DNA. They look at the end cap of your DNA. They can tell you what your life expectancy is for you individually, because it gradually deteriorates. When it's all gone, then your DNA starts to unravel and you start to get things like cancer and other things. You get more susceptible to that, just like a shoestring that has the end cap unravel on that. So you can protect your DNA health. DNA Force Plus is now 50% off. As I said, it's a big dollar savings. And finally, all of our Super Blue dental products with Nano Silver, the two flavors of toothpaste, the mouthwash, the gargle spray, all of those are 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Okay, CNN is reporting that North Korea has blown up their tunnels at the nuclear test site. This is at the mountain that collapsed on them when they blew up the hydrogen bomb, their first hydrogen bomb, 100 kiloton nuclear bomb that they blew up in September. And not too long after that, the mountain started collapsing and it continued to collapse. And now there is breaking news that the U.S. is pulling out of the summit. So I guess CNN's going to be coming home. I thought it was kind of interesting that people were saying this whole thing is just a show saying we're going to give up our nuclear test site. You know, that whole thing collapsed on them in October. They had 200 people killed in the initial cave-in of that mountain as they were trying to dig them out. It caved in again. Another 100 people died in that. And then not too long after that, surprisingly, Kim Jong-un said, you know what? I think we're going to be nice. I think we're going to close our nuclear test site. It was closed by gravity and by their stupidity. And then he goes to the Olympic Games and so forth, and then there was all this talk. But what has happened is there's two different issues going on here. Number one, we've had Bolton, and then they complained the last couple of days as Pence came out, both of them talking about Libya. First, Bolton said, well, we're going to follow the Libyan model. Well, everybody knows how that ended up after he turned over his nuclear weapons as they went to Oak Ridge. And this is what Bolton was saying. He said, we're going to bring them to Oak Ridge just like we did with Gaddafi. And then we're going to disassemble them at the Oak Ridge lab. And then we're going to follow the Libyan model, which means that after that, we take the guy out. And so that got them very upset, obviously. That wasn't going. You don't tip that in advance if that's what you're plans are to do that. And then we had Pence come in and say, well, you're going to get the Libyan treatment if you don't give up your nuclear weapons. And then Kim has been saying for the last few days, we may stop our test of nuclear weapons, but we're not going to give you what we've already got. Well, if that's the situation, there's really nothing to talk about. And so that looks like now the U.S. has pulled out of those talks. Hopefully that will send a message that we're not going to, that President Trump can't be played just with the promise of a Nobel Peace Prize medal. And I'm glad to see that that's the situation. If they're really going to give up their nuclear weapons, then great, let's go for it. However, South Korea doesn't want the U.S. to pull out. It's 30,000 or so troops that are stationed there. I mean, there's nothing in it really for the U.S. Yes, the guy is very reckless, but if he's not going to give up the missiles that he's already got, there's really nothing to talk about. But I found it interesting before this development that just broke on the news, the fact that CNN was bragging about the fact that they were there, because the North Korean government had said, we're going to allow a few journalists to come in. And at the time we said, yeah, it's only going to be the people who will say exactly what North Korea wants in exchange for access. And so that explains why CNN is there. So the CNN reported a CNN crew at the remote mountain site witnessed the destruction of nuclear tunnels 2, 3, and 4 from observation decks about 500 meters away. Before the explosion, the journalists said that they were invited to view the explosives that were rigged in the tunnels. See, look, we have explosives, as if they couldn't tell when they watched the explosion that there really were explosives there. I wonder if they did a sniff test of the explosives. You know, we had that CNN reporter who went to Syria to investigate the allegations of nerve gas in Syria, and she was sniffing clothing and other stuff like that, and it's like, well, if you could smell the nerve gas, it probably wouldn't be a good idea if it was still around to start doing the sniff test to detect it. There you go. That's that great job. They pulled that up right away. So yeah, she's going around sniffing the stuff, and they'd reported, well, you can't smell this actual kind of the nerve gas that was allegedly used there. So they hadn't read even their own reports, but they were sniffing around the tunnels. They were shown the explosives. And as many people said, maybe what he's just trying to do is destroy some evidence. I don't think they really have a test site there at that point. I think the excavations may be trying to pull some stuff out they could use at a later date. So there's not a great deal of trust, apparently, from the Trump administration either. Now, when we talk about trade with China, of course, President Trump had said, yeah, things are moving along until Kim Jong-un went to China and talked to President Xi. And then everything got really bad. And there's a lot of Chinese news that we're going to be talking about. You know, they're getting very aggressive throughout the region. They have built these artificial islands right off the coast of the Philippines. The Philippine country is getting a little bit concerned about that as well. At first, they were trying to use the Chinese, I think, as triangulation against the United States. But now I think they're starting, they made a couple of statements that indicate that they're concerned about the Chinese becoming very aggressive there. And of course, as they built these artificial islands and did it on some environmentally sensitive areas, as some people are complaining. But the biggest thing is that they're putting military installations on those artificial islands. And of course, it's called the China Sea, but it's not the China Sea, you know, when it is that close to the Philippines. That whole area is kind of like the Gulf of Mexico. If they, as I've said before, if Mexico or if Russia, let's say, well, let's just say Mexico, if they had the ability or the wishes to build missiles, if they started building artificial islands off the coast of Tampa Bay and started fortifying them with military weapons, you wouldn't say, well, it is, after all, the Gulf of Mexico. And that's what's happening in the Philippines. So they're getting kind of concerned about that. Now, the new thing that has come out is that President Trump has started talking about auto imports in the last 24 hours. Yesterday, he said there'll be big news coming soon for our great American auto workers. He did that yesterday morning. And the big news is that he's going to have Wilbur Ross consider initiating a Section 232 investigation into the imports of automobiles. Now, in case you don't remember, the 232 section is what he referenced when he put the tariffs on foreign-made steel and aluminum. 232 says that the president has the authority to unilaterally do things for the sake of American security, national security. And so you have one European official saying, this is flabbergasting. What makes the import of cars a threat to the national security of the United States? It's flagrant protectionism. Well, it's also about our trade deficit. And one of the things that we're going to talk about in the next hour is what has happened with the Chinese trade as they start to take some tariffs off of automobiles. The bottom line was is that most of the car companies, if they want to build cars, if they want to sell cars in China, they have to build them there. I think that's what President Trump is looking at, basically taking that approach. We'll be right back. Look at this in more depth.
Covering the ongoing fight for the heart and soul of America, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. And as we just reported in the last segment, President Trump has pulled out of the North Korean summit. He's canceled it. He said the decision is based on, quote, the tremendous anger and open hostility in a recent North Korean statement. He said he's looking very much forward to meeting with him someday. So in other words, call us when you chill out and we'll talk again. But right now, if you're going to talk like this, we don't really have anything to talk about. And the key sticking point here is the fact, I think, that the North Koreans have made the statement after we had John Bolton come out saying, you're going to get the Libyan treatment. They said, we're not going to give up the existing missiles that we have. Well, if you're not going to denuclearize, denuclearization doesn't mean that you just stop enhancing your nuclear arsenal. That means you get rid of it. And if they're not interested in getting rid of their nuclear arsenal, there really isn't anything to talk about, regardless of the rhetoric that is there. So President Trump is still open to negotiation, but they have said from the very beginning that getting rid of the nukes is the thing. That is the core issue there. Now, as I was saying just before we went to the break, there has been a update in terms of trying to equalize trade issues between the United States and China. One of the things that President Trump said yesterday was he said, I've instructed Secretary Ross to consider initiating a Section 232 investigation. And of course, that's the U.S. trade law that President Trump referenced in March when he called for tariffs on foreign-made steel and aluminum. It says that anything that is a core industry that reflects on our national security can be protected by the president. And so he says we're going to have him look into this to determine automobiles, trucks, and automotive parts to determine their effects on America's national security. And President Trump went on to say core industries such as automobiles and automotive parts are critical to our strength as a nation. And as the Europeans scoff at this and say that's simply protectionism, you have to understand it is a big part of our economy. Automobiles have always been a big part of our economy. And the trade deficit is really what we're talking about here with national security. You know, it's also the federal deficit is a big part of our national security. And we've had generals who've come out in the past and said, we've got to get a balanced budget amendment here. We can't keep going into massive debt with the federal government. It is a national security issue. If we don't have a strong economy, it truly is a national security issue. So it's not just our trade deficit, it is our federal government deficit. But as we look at this, and I've got a story coming up how the current generation is more interested in their cell phone payments than they are in their car payments. They're far more interested. If they get into a tight spot, they have noticed that they will pay, keep their iPhone going before they will pay for their car payments. That tells us a couple of things. It tells us how expensive the phones have become. But it also tells us that they don't really value their independence and their mobility, their freedom to move around. And that is something that is going to be used against us. And it is also something that shows that we have a sea change happening in this country in terms of a societal outlook. But as we're looking at the automotive trade part of this, in the last couple of days, there's been this back and forth, and Steve Mnuchin over the weekend said the trade war is ended. Well, that was absolute nonsense because President Trump, first of all, to say that is to say, as Steve Mnuchin, the Goldman Sachs banker, and previously there was Gary Cohen, the former president of Goldman Sachs, that was given hundreds of millions of dollars in early payouts so he could get into the Trump administration. He left because he lost the fight with Peter Navarro over the threat of Chinese trade tariffs. And Steve Mnuchin and Wall Street and Goldman Sachs and the bankers were very anxious to portray President Trump's attempts to try to equalize trade with China as a trade war. At the same time, they push 100% sanctions. That's real war, folks. We'll be right back. We'll talk about these automobile sanctions.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
David Knight on this Thursday, May 24th, 2018. Joining us in the next segment will be Matt Bracken. We're going to talk about Spygate. He has been on this from the very beginning, and it's always interesting to hear his takes on what is happening there. I want to talk in this segment about what is going on with the trade war. You know, President Trump has said we're going to take a look at automobiles. That's caused a lot of people who said, well, we're going to keep NAFTA. We're just going to tweak it around the edges. It's caused them to have a lot of concern as well, because they think that, that is now in jeopardy, and I hope it is. I don't think NAFTA has ever been in our interest. We can look at the figures now. This is not a speculation. You know, we were told by Ross Perot it was going to be a giant sucking sound. Well, it was even a bigger sucking sound than he said it was going to be. It has sucked a tremendous amount of money and jobs out of this country. Began right away. We had a rough trade parity between the United States and Mexico in terms of a trade deficit. And immediately, it jumped to a $17 billion deficit. You know, some years prior to that, we would have a $2 or $3 billion surplus or a $2 or $3 billion deficit with Mexico. After NAFTA, it jumped to $17 billion and stayed there for a couple of years and then went up, got up to the 70s, $70 billion in some years. It's never gone down below $17 billion in the years since. And so we've had about 25 years of this stuff. It isn't a theory anymore, folks. And all the people who are selling you free trade, I find it very interesting that for the most part, the people who want open trade, the globalists, especially the Democrat side that are pushing this and screaming about a trade war, they're also the people who want to have taxes here at home as well. So they don't, no taxes on the multinational corporations, but tax everything internally. And that is exactly the opposite of what this country was founded on. As I've said before, you know, President Jefferson, in his second inaugural address, looked back on what he considered to be the prime accomplishment in his first term, and that was to eliminate all internal taxation. He said, what farmer, what laborer, what mechanic knows a tax man? I'm proud to say none of them, because we've eliminated useless offices. In other words, he got a government that would fit inside the Constitution, and he was able to fund the entire government by just some minor, by today's standards, some minor tariffs at the border. That's how they funded it. So they had trade, they had taxes at the border on goods coming into the country, but a free trade zone inside. And now we have exactly the opposite that's being pushed by the globalists. So what happened in the last couple of days, as I was pointing out at the top of the hour, we had Steve Mnuchin declaring the trade war is over. Well, Steve, it never was a trade war, what President Trump was talking about. The trade war began with Henry Kissinger and the globalists supporting China and allowing them to have a one-sided advantage over us. And what President Trump has been trying to do is to try to equalize that. When we have a 2.5% tariff on automobiles and China has a 25% tariff on automobiles that we sell to them, that's not open trade. That's not fair trade. That's not free trade. That is a taxed trade. And so as they were pushing this through, China very graciously said, well, we'll lower that from 25% to 15%. Oh, great. Well, that's still six times as much as we have here. And what they pointed out is people were looking at this earlier in the week, a couple of days ago, they said foreign automakers primarily just sell locally produced automobiles in China. It's only a few makers of premium cars that are really going to see any change in this. Because long time ago, GM and Ford and Lincoln, all these other German and Japanese brands, they learned that they're going to be punished and pummeled if they try to build their cars somewhere else and import them into Japan, so the into China. So the only thing they can do is to open up a factory in China. I think that's what President Trump is angling for in this as well. You know, when he started talking about increasing and was just back in March, he said, we're going to take a look at this. And under this section, I think it's 232 that he's having Wilbur Ross look at to defend our national security, we're going to raise steel tariffs to 25% to get them to the level that China has on our steel going in. And now he's saying, we're going to do the same thing with automobiles. We're going to say that automobiles are a national security issue, and we're going to raise the tariffs on automobiles. Well, what effect is that going to have? That's going to have the same effect to have people produce their automobiles in the United States. So if you've got a foreign automobile company, they will build an American factory, which a lot of them have already started doing. But they will do that more if there are tariffs on the goods coming into this country. So I think what President Trump is doing is he understands the tactics that the Chinese have taken, along with the globalists, to eviscerate our jobs and our industrial base. And he says, well, we'll do the same thing here. If they're going to put prohibitive taxes on cars and steel coming into their country so that people will open up factories in China, we'll do the same thing. And then people will open up factories here in America. They're saying that for some brands, they said it'll mean more to BMW than it does to Ford and Tesla because they said traditional Detroit brands such as Chevrolet, this is from Bloomberg a couple of days ago, collectively exported fewer than 100,000 vehicles to China last year. Why? Because of the big taxes, the 25% tariff that they have faced for years led them to open up plants in the country to avoid import taxes altogether. Even holdouts like Ford Motor Company's Lincoln and Tesla are going to build cars there soon. And so they said, well, you know, China says they're going to lower it from 25 to 15%. Really doesn't make much difference because we're going to have to still build the cars in China in order to be able to sell cars in China. They said while Italian-American automaker Fiat Chrysler will enjoy lower tariffs on Jeep sport utilities, imports have been falling as the company makes more of its models in China. See, they're all doing that. Tesla, who doesn't have factories there yet, as a matter of fact, it's a question how much of a factory they've got here in the United States since they can't build a Model 3. But out of the Model X, which they are currently able to build, it's going to mean $14,000 off of the price of that luxury vehicle. And that just shows you how expensive these tariffs are. When you have, as I said before, only the luxury car makers are even bothering to try to export cars in the Chinese market. But even then, it's going to make a difference of $14,000 on a Tesla automobile. And so as we look at this, and we look at the fact that President Trump is doing tax cuts, that he is taking care of what we would consider to be the eviscerated Rust Belt and so forth, is it any surprise that we have the blue wave collapsing? As PJ Media points out, they said on Monday, Reuters announced that the Democrat Party's strong lead on the generic ballot question. This is a specific poll, a generic ballot question. Are you going to vote Republican or Democrat? And I don't really know how important that poll is, quite frankly. But maybe it is. I mean, a lot of people just vote a straight party line. That had been the great hope of the Democrats, the great blue hope, if you will. And they came up with a hashtag, hashtag blue wave. They said, however, when it started going the other way, they conveniently forgot all about that. And so they said, here we are 48 hours after we've seen this poll showing the blue wave collapse, and mainstream media is still not talking about it. It's still crickets. They've been trending downwards for nearly a month, and the GOP has been steadily advancing since the start of April. Now we have five straight data points of the GOP in the lead or a virtual tie, 48 hours plus of the data being available to the media that want to talk all about horse races. That's all they ever want to talk about is a horse race, unless their horse isn't doing too well in the race. And at that point, outside of the Drudge Report and the conservative media, it is total crickets about this. They just don't want to talk about it. And it's this type of thing with President Trump understanding that it is about the economy, stupid. The Democrats used to understand that. I think there's still some Democrat strategists that understand this, like Hillary Clinton's Democrat strategist from 2008 said, shut up about Spygate stuff and impeachment. That's not going to help us. People realize that's a fraud. And when we come back, Matt Bracken is going to tell you just how much of a fraud it is. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to one of my favorite guests, Matt Bracken. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at Matt Bracken. That's Matt with two T's. Matt Bracken 48. And he also has a website, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. And I want to talk to Matt about, well, last time I talked to him, we talked about Spygate. It wasn't called Spygate then. That's a coined term by President Trump yesterday. That's going to stick. That's a great term. It pulls together Watergate and the spies and everything. They don't like to be called spies, as James Clapper said, but we all understand what's going on here. And I want to talk to him about that. But before we do, Matt, I want to get your comments on the fact that we just had the president pull out of the talks with North Korea, as well as what he has said about China and trade tariff. They're sticking firm on the steel and aluminum tariffs with China, and now they're adding automobiles into the mix. I mean, how do you what do you think about the stances that President Trump has taken on these negotiations internationally with the Chinese and the North Koreans?
I think that it's important that people don't look at North Korea in exclusion or separately from China.
Yes.
North Korea is basically a cat's paw for China. They can they can have North Korea. They pull the strings. They can have North Korea fire missiles and rile us up and then act like, oh, that's our crazy uncle. We can't control him. Mm-hmm. But really, he gets his marching orders from Beijing, little rocket man. In fact, I think his only trip outside of the country, he went on one of these armored trains, like, you know, 12 miles into China. So it was as close as he could get to dragging North Korean territory with him. Mm-hmm. So for him to actually go to Singapore is a huge move. And it's very risky for both him and the Chinese because, you know, if, for example, if the Chinese generals, or excuse me, North Korean generals thought that he really was going to open up North Korea and pull an East Germany reunification, then a lot of Chinese general or North Korean generals might wind up in Nuremberg trials or, you know, are facing like a Romania turnover situation. They call it Romanian term limits because there's, you know, millions of North Koreans very angry. They're not all brainwashed. They have to pretend to be. And there are hundreds of thousands in harsh Stalinist-type gulags, you know, torture camps, death camps, entire families. So if he leaves the country, it would be a rife opportunity for the North Korean generals to pull a coup, and China might not be able to control that. So it was very risky for him to go to Singapore in the first place. But it's really a Chinese maneuver. So we have to see that Trump is making the tariff negotiations with China is integrally knitted with the North Korean, you know, missile and nuclear talks. They can't be separated.
And he acknowledged that as well. You know, he said in the last couple of days, he goes, yeah, things were looking very good until the little rocket man went to China, and then things have been kind of nasty since then. So they've been talking about Bolton, talking about the Libyan model and so forth, but President Trump understood that there was a big change in attitude once he went to talk to the Chinese. So I think Trump understands, as you put it, that they're the cat's paw of the Chinese, and they also sees the big, bold moves that the Chinese are making in terms of threatening Taiwan, building military bases very close to the Philippines, where we have a big military presence there. But even the Philippine government is starting to get concerned about that. I think they welcomed it somewhat, made some welcoming statements, feeling that it was going to somehow give them a little independence from American dominance. But now I think they're starting to get really worried about the Chinese themselves.
Yeah, and they should be. And you know, any treaty which formalized the regime protection for Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un and his generals, to me, would be similar to what Roosevelt did in the early 30s when he regularized relations with the USSR. You know, this is a very dangerous and kind of evil thing, dancing with the devil. Mm-hmm. Diana West has a terrific book, which I only read recently, and it's probably the most important book I've read in many years, called American Betrayal. Once we regularized relations with the Soviet Union, it was in our bureaucracy's behalf or interest to hide their atrocities. You know, if we're now having normal diplomatic relations with Stalin, that's when we hid the Ukraine famine, for the terror famine, you know, the great purges. We sort of allied with them for the sake of preserving the illusion of, you know, this guy we're working with. I say we should be setting up, you know, Radio North Korea and broadcasting into these Stalinist torture camps that America is on your side and we won't rest until you're free.
Not, and of course, that's one of the things that they took down immediately. They did have a South Korean propaganda broadcast that was going. They shut that down as a sign of goodwill. They stopped doing that kind of broadcasting.
That's goodwill with, you know, Joe Stalin, and it's goodwill with Little Rocket Man, and it's goodwill with the Chinese dictators. But it's a breaking of the faith with their people. Mm-hmm. It's saying, hey, we're willing to make a deal with your slave masters as long as they promise us, you know, which they'll always lie. So making promises with communists is an idiot's, you know, idiot's mission anyway, because communists, like the Islamists, strategic deception is part of their modus operandi. If we haven't learned anything in the last century, any deal you make either with Islamists or with communists isn't worth the paper it's written on, because they're just tactical treaties made to be broken, you know, when it suits our enemy. So we should be holding faith with the people and standing for freedom and not making deals with their tyrants.
You're exactly right. And it's not just the people that he's put into political camps or executed or whatever. It's everybody in the country. I mean, when this all started, people were comparing the differences between the North and South Koreans. I think in one way, the North Koreans and the Chinese have done the world a great favor by giving us another example. Just as we had with East and West Germany, we now have North and South Korea, where you can see what an authoritarian communist country does to the same people. You take the same people, all these Germans, all these Koreans, you cut the country in half, you put one of them under a free economy, the other half you put under this authoritarian communist regime, and then you step back and watch what happens after a couple of decades. And what happened in North Korea is that these people have got a 10-year less life expectancy. They're smaller, physically smaller than the other people, because they're being starved to death. It's not just the people who are put in concentration camps, it's the entire population that is being starved, denied medical treatment, malnourished, and had their life expectancy cut, and so many other things.
Yeah, and they can't even man their military. They're so tiny and malnourished that they have a hard time even putting their show troops at the DMZ. You know, the South Koreans have units at the DMZ where everybody's like a 6-foot-tall Korean. And it just shows, you know, it's a way of like putting it in their face. But, you know, it's very evil to make deals with these guys while their people are in slavery. So I would hold out against that, you know, and a lesson of the Cold War is that we really didn't learn a lesson of the Cold War. When East and West Germany reunited, for example, there were no Nuremberg trials after the fall of the Soviet Union or the fall of communism in East Germany. And now look who the leader of Germany is, a former communist.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we still hear from all the people like Bernie Sanders, in spite of what's going on in Venezuela, in spite of what we saw in East and West Germany, North and South Korea, we still have all the elites worshiping the ideals of Marxism. I mean, we saw this after the 200th anniversary of Karl Marx. We had people like Michael Moore, all the left. Oh, he's a wonderful guy, still is. We'll be right back.
The InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We're talking to Matt Bracken. Of course, his Twitter account is MattBracken48. His website is enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. We've been talking about North Korea, China, the trade talks, and as Matt correctly pointed out, you can't separate one from the other. They are connected together. And our economic health is connected to our national security. That includes our trade deficit, as well as our federal deficit. That is something else that we need to take a look at. But we do need to look at our trade deficit. We need to have a strong, vibrant economy. President Trump is doing that. That's why the Democrats are collapsing in the generic ballot poll, even though the mainstream media doesn't talk about that. But I want to talk to Matt now about Spygate, because, Matt, the last time you were on, you correctly pointed out that one person that we haven't heard about very much, kind of the, as Sherlock Holmes put it, the dog that did not bark, was Bill Priestap. And, of course, he was under Andrew McCabe and over Peter Strzok. And so this is the guy in between these two characters that you hear about all the time, 24/7 from everybody on both sides. And yet we don't hear anything from Bill, the guy who was in the middle. Maybe he's not just the dog that didn't bark, but maybe he's the canary that is singing. What do you think?
I think for sure he is. It looks like Strzok and Page were trying to work around him, and their small group, quote unquote small group, jumped the chain of command to McCabe and Comey. Another name that's been out now so much that I think there's something to it is the other FBI agent that was at the Flynn interrogation. Mm-hmm. He apparently wants to talk. You know, something that everybody should know, because this also is it concerns other people like Papadopoulos. You know, there's a law called 1001, which is lying to the FBI. Mm-hmm. And there's another number that's important to know, which is 302. That's the report or the notes that the FBI take of an interview. If they want to put somebody in prison or threaten to put them in prison to induce a guilty plea or get them to do something else that they want, the FBI, if they're acting illegally, evilly, but they do it sometimes, you know, they could make Mother Teresa guilty of a 1001 based on false write-up of 302s. Now, yeah. these 302s are mentioned prominently in the Strzok page texts. This is some of the stuff that the DOJ and FBI do not want Congress to see. You know, because if the FBI agent in the Flynn meeting is saying he never lied, and then they induce a perjury guilty plea out of him, you can bet that this was a 1001 plus a 302 FBI classic felony trap.
Everybody should be concerned about this, because we saw this happen to Martha Stewart. She never was convicted of insider trading. They got her on this same thing that they came after Michael Flynn about. This is an entrapment scheme. And to me, when I see people like Jim Clapper come out and say, well, yeah, okay, we had some people on the in the campaign, but we didn't have spies. It was a very benign thing. Well, it wasn't a very benign thing for Michael Flynn. He's had to spend so much money on this that, you know, he's lost his reputation, lost his job, lost a great deal of money, lost his house. I mean, it's not a benign thing.
Importantly, Flynn had to be taken out because he was a white hat in the middle of black hat territory. Mm-hmm. He was a danger to their cabal of coup plotters. He had to be destroyed. So they politically assassinated him. They sent in Strzok. They changed the 302 interview notes, obviously, at some point. And this is all going to come out now. It's unavoidable, not only because of some FBI agents that I'm no doubt are singing to, not only to IG Horowitz, but also to the prosecutor Huber from Utah. And maybe it's a long shot or contrarian, but I kind of tend to think that there's something to what this guy Sundance at Conservative Treehouse believes, which is that for all the slings and arrows Jeff Sessions is taking, he's playing it low key because anything he says now would be turned against Trump and himself as politicizing the investigation. But when the IG report drops, there could also be a lot of indictments dropping because Horowitz and Huber, he thinks, are working very closely together. Grand juries are ongoing. And after the IG report drops, I mean, remember the next installment of the IG is concerning the Hillary investigation, which includes things like Uranium One, which then will go right to Mueller, because Mueller, Weissmann, and Rosenstein are all up to their necks in responsibility for Uranium One, which was a $145 million bribery scheme, to sell 20% of our uranium. So this is also why I think Trump won't fire Mueller. Mueller is going to be blown out of the water, possibly by the IG report. And the other thing that's going to blow them out of the water, it seems now from reporting by Jack Posobiec on One America News, and Mark Stein he's got British background. I'm not quite sure about Mark Stein where he's from, but I think he's born in the UK.
Canadian.
Our Brennan Clapper Comey cabal must have convinced the Brits to go along with this. At the top, the deep state is international. That's what Comey talks about. His book is called A Higher Loyalty. It ain't to the United States, folks. It's to international, whatever you want to call it, socialism, neo-Marxism, New World Order, ruled by the international elites. Well, Brennan Clapper Comey, we're working with the very top of British Secret Services. We're talking like former head of MI6, former head of their version of the NSA. This guy, Joseph Mifsud, he is not a Russian spy. That's how they try to dress him up. He has 100 times more connections to British intelligence than to anything to do with Russia. So Mifsud is the genesis man of Crossfire Hurricane. He's the guy they're saying, well, if you Papadopoulos talked to Downer, the Australian ambassador in the London bar, but it was information from Mifsud. Mifsud fed him the original information. And Mifsud hasn't been seen since Halloween, since October 31. Mifsud, the Genesis man of Crossfire Hurricane, probably is sleeping with the fishes, or he's buried under the turf somewhere over there, you know, because it's very mysterious that the Genesis man of Crossfire Hurricane is gone.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of this whole Skripal poisoning thing, because this double agent, Skripal, a Russian agent, his controllers, the people that were around him running him, were also involved in this dirty dossier. Christopher Seal and another individual were responsible for running him, and he had been in contact with them before this happened. I think, as I look at this, I'm suspicious that there might be a double purpose in that Skripal poisoning, not only to shut him up about things he might know about what's going on with this, but also to give an impetus to pushing into Syria as well by the UK.
Yes. Yes, the possible false flag gas attack seems to have a lot of fingerprints that lead back to the same, you know, chemistry that's used in the Skripal poisoning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is quite a tangled nest, and it's not, they can't, at this point, it's impossible to put out all these brush fires. You know, they had all their eggs in the basket that Hillary would win and will cover it up. And now that it's international, you've got Australia involved. Their highest ambassador to the UK is being used as a CIA stooge, an asset, in a setup, in a spy trap. You know, you've got the head of MI, former head of MI6, former head of their, I forget the initials, GCHQ, whatever it is, their NSA. You know, you've got other ambassadors that are setting up this meeting between Downer and Papadopoulos, the chance meeting. You know, this was such a setup from go. They had to have a reason for their quote-unquote counterintelligence operation against Trump. So they had to invent the crimes because there were no crimes. So not only did they let Hillary off on numerous felonious, serious crimes, they had to invent crimes to frame Trump. And it's all coming out.
That's right. Even Stephen Halper, the guy who's been outed as the spy and put inside the campaign with long, long establishment ties in Washington, he also had ties to Cambridge. He was teaching at Cambridge University. So, yeah, a lot of British ties. That's where we see this all going back to. We're going to be right back with Matt Bracken. Stay with us. Again, you can find him on Twitter, MattBracken48, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Matt Bracken. Before we go back to Matt, I just want to tell you real quickly about some of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have added the Real Red Pill at a 50% discount to our sales at InfoWarsStore.com, and that joins other products like our entire Super Blue line of dental products. We've got two flavors of toothpaste. We've got a mouthwash. We have a gargle spray. All of those have nano silver. They don't have fluoride. They have the good halogen, iodine. Try those right now if you haven't tried them at 50% off. We know that you are going to love that. And, of course, we have the Real Red Pill Plus at 50% off and Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, 25% off. Finally, Bod Ease, our intense turmeric formula to help you support your flexibility, your mobility, your joints, and your immune system. Bod Ease is also 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Take a look at the sales we have there. We really do appreciate your support. That's what funds this program. You know, Matt, as we're talking before about these charges against General Flynn, of course, he didn't know that he was being in a formal interrogation from what he said. They say, well, we find something factual here that is a discrepancy. And now we have one of the FBI agents that was there said, I would love to testify, because he doesn't believe that there was anything there. And as you pointed out, he was a white hat. He had to be removed. He had to be removed quickly. Two things about this I'd like to get your response on. Number one, James Clapper, who committed perjury a little over five years ago, he just passed to his get-out-of-jail-free time limit for charges against him. He lied to the American people when he said he wasn't spying on everybody, and it was maybe about a month or two at the max before we had the Snowden documents coming out showing what a liar he was. But he lied to everybody, said, no, we're not spying on the American public. And he got away with that lie. That was under oath, and that was to the American people. It wasn't about some kind of inside Washington politics thing. So everybody, I think, left and right should be upset with this guy for what he did, how he has deceived the American public. But he gets a get-out-of-jail-free card with that. The other part about this with the Flynn case that concerns me is Vice President Pence's involvement in this. What do you think about Pence? I mean, he's cozied up to the neocon Nikki Haley. He was there doubling down on these charges that Flynn had lied to him, not just to the FBI. What's your read on Pence?
I don't trust him. I think that he's a chameleon. I think that if Trump was, if it looked like Trump stood to be impeached, he would jump on it and put his weight on that side of the scale in a heartbeat.
I agree.
I don't trust him at all.
I agree. Absolutely, I agree. As you were saying before, it looks like things are coming out and they're going to be looking at, going back to Uranium One, a lot of the pay-for-play stuff. We have Jay Sekulow saying, we have uncovered thousands of documents showing pay-to-play between Hillary's State Department and the Clinton Foundation. This is exactly what I think they've been worried about and should be worried about. And Charles Ortel, I've had him on multiple times, talking about how it's a totally bogus charity. It's not even registered. They don't file any of the paperwork. I mean, this thing is simply a RICO scam.
Right. And as opposed to spending the money, what you do is you hire Gulfstream jets and fly to conferences and invite 100 of your friends, to live in 5-star resorts. So that's not spending money. You're just using it as an expense. It's pretty nice if you can do it. I mean, wouldn't you like to fly everywhere on private jets and stay in 5-star resorts everywhere you go? Of course, you need a chef and a hairdresser. It's all paid out of the foundation money.
And we can also fit some young children in the back there to hand out to various people from Haiti.
Yeah, Lolita Island.
Yeah.
For blackmail purposes down the road.
I guess as I look at this, Matt, the problem is the patience of the American people. You know, we've got an attention span that's about 2 or 3 hours long. And this thing is taking a while to roll out. And even though there's been, by the pace of Washington, where everything moves at a glacial pace, or an investigation where it moves very slowly, things, I think, are, by that standard, they're moving very rapidly. But by the standard of the American public, things are moving very slowly. Do you think we're going to have some major, or is it going to accelerate quickly? Sometimes people say, how do you go, if you're very wealthy, how do you go bankrupt? And one guy famously said, very gradually at first and then very rapidly. Do you think it's going to take that kind of a path?
Yes, and I think that Trump knows a lot more than he's tweeting, because he's actually very cagey. He usually uses tweets to troll the media, to get them to react and change the daily narrative that they'd like to present. But I have no doubt that he's been conferring with people like Mike Flynn and Mike Rogers, the white hat of the NSA that alerted him at Trump Tower. That Mike Rogers knows. If Mike Rogers doesn't know the secret, he knows who knows the secret. And I'm sure he's been on the white hat team. And I think that the hammer is going to come down. And what they've been doing is been laying a very careful foundation. That's why I hope Sessions has been laying so low, taking all the slings and arrows all this time. The other factor is all the foreign involvement. This is going to explode in Britain and Australia, especially in Britain. You have not only our top elite deep state operatives, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Yates, all of these people, you have their equivalents in Britain up to it in their necks. So this scandal is going to explode. You're looking at the Trump Tower meeting. This is an example of how the media today, 2018, it's so different from when I was a kid during Watergate, when all you had was, ABC, NBC, CBS, that was it. They had one narrative. They stuck to it. Nixon was gone in 2 years. But in this case, we've got a wide variety of media, and it's interesting to watch CNN sort of they're in an airplane with all four engines on fire, heading for the mountains. But they're still saying there's no evidence of any spying. A year ago, they were saying Trump is crazy. There was no evidence of wiretapping. So they're flying. They're going to fly into the mountain, and they're going to take their people with them. But the cognitive dissonance among the Democrats is going to be so huge when this thing actually fireballs, when they see what is going to be laid out by the IG report and the subsequent indictments, that I think that there could be a huge red wave. This could destroy the Democrat Party. You know, this is the time now to ask Democrats, get on the record. Are you for this police state operation, this spying against a political, or are you not? You know, are you for it or are you against it? Get on the record now, because if you are going to be on the record supporting these Stasi tactics, these KGB tactics, we want to know that, because we're going to run ads saying that, you know, come November, come October.
You know, and I think some of the strategists who are looking at the long-term strategy, the long-term effect of this, they can see that coming. We've had some like people in the Democrat Party say that say we need to pull back from this, impeach him now and everything. The people like Al Green, who can't see past the end of their nose, are still out there screaming, you know, and Maxine Waters still out there screaming, impeach, impeach. But we got Hillary Clinton's strategist from 2008 coming out and sounding like Alan Dershowitz. He says, look, this isn't an issue that should be divided by parties. We need to clean up this corruption that's going on in the intelligence community and so forth. He's starting to sound like Alan Dershowitz in terms of this, because they're trying to pull back away from this after jumping in on the side of Michael Wolff and Stormy Daniels and all this other kind of stuff. They see where this is headed now, this massive corruption, and they want to distance themselves from that, the smart people in the Democrat Party. But so many of them don't see this coming.
No, in 73 and 74, the elders of the Republican Party, you know, went to see Nixon and said, look, maybe you can battle this successfully, maybe not, but for the good of the country, you've got to step down. And Watergate was nothing compared to this, which involved CIA, NSA, you know, being the treasure, the coffers of the NSA were opened up to, you know, dozens of Sally Yates's, you know, to just use as political weapons with the unmasking. This goes to the very top, and it's going to lead into the Oval Office, because eventually some of these people that don't want to go to prison, I'm thinking maybe Clapper, Brennan, I don't know. I think that there'll be suicides. I think there'll be canoe accidents a la William Colby.
Yeah, and I talked about that yesterday.
And I think that there will be people like Joseph Mifsud that are never heard from again. You know, the Genesis man of Crossfire Hurricane, where is Joseph Mifsud? I'll bet Brennan knows.
Yeah.
Brennan knows where he is.
I hope that we see people going to jail with this, because, you know, Matt, I don't think that there's going to be any reform by passing any kind of legislation. These people don't pay any attention to the law. The only thing that's going to get their attention is if some of these criminals go to jail. And if we keep giving these people a get out of jail card because of their position, you know, like Comey or McCabe or whatever, and we don't send any of these guys to jail, boy, it's going to get really, really bad for us.
You can see that Mueller is Crossfire Hurricane 2.0. His special counsel status, he took the same teams that exonerated Hillary and then ran the frame job on Trump. He brought them into his special counsel. So Mueller is just Crossfire Hurricane. But he is now in a death battle to take out Trump. He still thinks he can preserve his team if he takes out Trump.
But it's an existential fight for him, and it's an existential fight for us as well to try to make sure that, you know, these same people are doing this stuff to President Trump. You know, they said, we're not interested in bad people, Michael Hayden said. He said, we're interested in interesting people. Thank you, Matt. And, of course, you can find Matt Bracken 48 on Twitter.
Broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You know, we have Comey out there still virtue signaling. I don't know if he's talking about Trump or his own people. He said, our country is led by those who will lie about anything. Well, yeah, we've noticed that. And so has President Trump. He came back and said, Comey, you've got a lot of problems. Just leave it at that. We know that we know who the liars are with us. We've got Mueller fighting media access to secret court filings. And President Trump comes out and says, we need total transparency. Not fighting to keep this stuff secret, but we need transparency. This is really not going to work out to their advantage, I think. And one of the key things is breaking, as Matt Bracken pointed out in the last in the interview in the last half hour, the fact that we've got Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley revealing that the second FBI agent who joined Peter Strzok in an ambush-style interview to take down General Flynn, his name is Joe Pientka, I think, maybe is the way you pronounce his name, And he was there with Peter Strzok, and he wants to testify. Yeah, it's not a very benign thing to do what they did to Michael Flynn, even though Clapper says, oh, this is a very, very benign thing. I think the best article I've seen about this coming out in the last couple of weeks is the take from Cheryl Atkinson. She said, 8 signs that point to a counterintelligence operation that was deployed against President Trump. And as Matt Bracken pointed out, this all kind of comes back to British intelligence, and it's going to have massive impact on British intelligence as well. All the people over there in these same positions were in on this. As an article Zero Hedge points out, John Brennan's plot to infiltrate the Trump campaign is exposed. They say Brennan used half-baked tips, you know, tips that turned out to be bogus and other things from British intelligence. He used those, you know, called the guys up. It's like, hey, send us a memo saying that you are concerned a little bit about something with the Trump campaign. That'll give us authorization to start digging. That's the way these two groups worked hand in glove. But as Cheryl Atkinson points out, here's the 8 signs. Number one, they've got a code name. It's an operation. And we've seen that in the last week or so, Crossfire Hurricane. So they've got a name for this operation. And it is an operation. Number two, wiretap fever. Secret surveillance conducted on no fewer than 7 Trump associates. Number three, national security letters being put out. That should also raise concerns about this. Unmasking, pointing out that Samantha Power, the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., revealed that she made near daily unmasking requests in 2016. The U.N. ambassador is wanting to unmask individuals in the Trump campaign. Then you got Susan Rice, the former national security advisor. She admitted to unmasking names of U.S. citizens in intelligence reports after initially claiming that she had no knowledge of any such thing. And then we got Clapper the liar. Clapper also admitted to requesting the unmasking of Mr. Trump, his associates, or any members of Congress, quote unquote. So all of that is at the center of it. All this unmasking, changing the rules. Number five, on December the 15th, 2016, the same day the government listened in on Trump officials at Trump Tower, Susan Rice reportedly unmasked the names of Bannon, Kushner, and Flynn, and Clapper made a new rule made by Clapper, allowing the NSA to widely disseminate surveillance material. So they got this massive operation. They're unmasking the stuff, and now it's like, oh, okay, we're putting in this stuff on a daily basis. Now we're going to put in a new rule so we can spread this even further. Then the media strategies, the leaks, the friends, the informants, the snoops that they all used. Yeah, the 8 signs that this is a full-blown counterintelligence operation. That's what Alan Dershowitz said. He said the liberals used to be upset when the FBI did counterintelligence operations. You know, programs. They used to call it COINTELPRO. He said, well, they did it against liberal groups who didn't like it. Now they're doing it against politicians who are running for the presidency. I don't like it either. And I don't like the fact that they do it to us. That's the key thing. These people have to go to jail.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Earlier in the show, I was talking about the fact that this Reuters poll that showed the generic ballot, you know, you're going to vote for this party, you're going to vote for that party. Well, that has reversed in a major way. And it's done it for quite some time. And it is accelerating. And yet the mainstream media is not talking about this. Why is this happening? Well, I think we've got a couple of clips here that tell you why that is happening. First of all, there's a clip with a business owner coming after Nancy Pelosi for her crumbs statement. Yeah, it's the economy, stupid. Maybe in her approaching dementia, as people are talking about this, there's a lot of really aged politicians right now that I guess we could kind of put them all in the category of the walking dead. Nancy Pelosi is showing signs of dementia because of her old age, but she is like all the rest of these people. You know, whether you're talking about Dianne Feinstein, who's running for re-election in her mid-80s, You're talking about John McCain, who did the same thing, and then now he is on death's bed with a terminal cancer, and yet he won't resign. He won't get out. You got Paul Ryan, who says, well, I'm going to resign sometime next year, but I'm going to stay here as a lame duck over the GOP. These people don't want to go under any circumstances. I mean, they're there for a lifetime appointment. But to give you an idea where this is going and why this is happening, here's this clip from a business owner coming after Nancy Pelosi because of her crumbs statement. Video 6.
We are a small business of 7 full-time employees that provide fertilizer and seed products to our farm customers.
In Iowa.
When the tax and jobs bill was passed, I gave my employees a $1,000 bonus plus a 5% pay increase that they appreciated very much. Add to that, they reduced withholding from their paychecks, and it turned into a noticeable increase in income. This certainly was not crumbs to them. Yeah. My question is, what can you add to this legislation that would also contribute to the growth of jobs and wages in our country?
Oh, she's going to take
a
look.
Thank you, John, and let me congratulate you and commend you because you're a rarity. Not many business, only a small percentage of businesses shared their tax advantage with their employees. So let us thank John for that.
Oh, nice deflection there. Nice deflection. Look, she's going to fight you for every crumb on your table. And she's going to do everything she can to put that small business owner out of business. I remember when Hillary Clinton was pushing nationalized health care. They had a lot of people like me that were going to town halls and saying, you know, we can't afford to do this. It's going to put us out of business if we have to do this and so forth. And Hillary Clinton's response to all of us was, I can't be concerned about every undercapitalized business. See, a lot of us don't get endless sources of money on Wall Street. You know, there's some businesses that have been losing money, massively losing money, year after year after year, losing billions of dollars. You know, businesses like Amazon did that for a very long time. Tesla is doing it now for several years. They can keep getting funding on Wall Street, but not the small businesses, not like that guy who's got 7 employees, not the small business that I ran. And Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat Party don't care about the American workers, and they don't care about the American businesses. If you're not big enough to buy influence with Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi, they really don't care about you. And I want to play another clip here about Trump. Here's another reason. It's not just the economy, stupid. It's your embracing MS-13 and the criminals. Here's President Trump trolling Nancy Pelosi on supporting MS-13.
Don't believe in making a strong military. They don't believe in what the people in this room believe, that I can tell you. So we have to do a great job. If Democrats ever gained power, they would try to put up the taxes, so many things, open those borders. They don't want walls. They don't want people stopping. And the other day, just the other day, Nancy Pelosi came out in favor of MS-13. That's the first time I've heard that. She wants them to be treated with respect, as do other Democrats. That's not going to be happening. We're not going to release violent criminals into our country.
That's right. We got some stuff from President Trump when he was in New York yesterday, and some comments from the chief of ICE addressing Nancy Pelosi, addressing the New York governor as well. We got that coming up. But I want to go back and just, we've been talking the last half hour, talked to Matt Bracken, we talked about what's happening with Spygate. And I just want you to hear from the lying machine himself, as President Trump calls Jim Clapper. Great, great name for him. The lying machine himself, who basically should be in jail. And we've got another chance to get him because he's still out there telling lies, some of them under oath. So he got away with lying to us all about the dragnet surveillance of the NSA. But we still got another bite at that criminal, and there may be some other crimes that come to light with this guy. But here he is saying that it was a very benign thing to spy on the Trump campaign. I'm telling you, the Spygate thing that President Trump had, that's another big reason. Not just the economy, not just their embrace of MS-13 and criminal voters like they're doing in New York, but also this intrigue, this corruption in Washington, this attempt to overthrow the last election. That's not going to work too well in the next election. Here's James Clapper talking about how his spy program really was just a benign thing.
Right.
Well, my understanding, and again, I should point out, Jake, that I did not know about this contemporaneously.
The FBI was doing this on its own.
Yes,
they didn't tell you about
which is the standard procedure.
I never knew
the identity of informants in the FBI, nor should I. And so I'm sure this was and there's very strict rules and protocols for using informants. In any circumstance, and especially one
doesn't
one like
mean that
this.
He follows
it,
those.
It appeared to me, from what I've read, now that unfortunately the individual has been exposed in some parts of the media, that this is a very benign thing that where he engaged directly with two or three people about, and again trying to glean insight into what might the Russians be doing here to gain access to the campaign.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he had also spied. For the Republicans against Carter. He'd basically done the same thing. They knew this guy. They could get whatever they wanted to from him. It is not a benign thing. And we're going to find out just how malignant this cancer of corruption in Washington is. We're going to find that out in the next few weeks, I think. I think things are going to, we've seen this going very gradually. This has been something we've been talking about here for over a year. It's difficult to keep the public's attention over that period of time. It's difficult for me to keep my attention on this, quite frankly, because it moves at such a glacial pace. But I think things are starting to accelerate now, maybe gradually and now rapidly, that things are going to develop. Nevertheless, the Democrats are still pinning their hopes on people like Hillary, the dirty dossier, Michael Wolff. Remember that? Remember that flash in the pan? A lot of Democrats put a lot of confidence on that guy. Oh, his Fire and Fury book, that was really going to take down President Trump, right? And then Stormy Daniels is going to do the same thing. People in the Hollywood crowd, especially West Hollywood, they love Stormy Daniels. They've given her the key to the city. And this is a city where they recognized her for her leadership in the resist movement. I don't know that Stormy has ever resisted anybody's advances. maybe if you didn't have enough money. I think instead of giving her the key to the city, they should have named the parking meters after her. You know, because you're just renting a space, kind of like these celebrity prostitutes here, right? That'd be an appropriate tribute to Stormy. I don't know that giving her the keys to the city would be appropriate, but maybe, you know, naming the parking meters after her. The city has previously passed resolutions calling for articles of impeachment for President Trump. So this is all the impeach him now Democrat crowd pinning their hopes on people like Michael Wolff, on Stormy Daniels, on her her lawyer. Presumably he's her lawyer. I mean, you know, when you're on 150 times in just a couple of months, are you really doing anything for your client? And he's running up millions of dollars in terms of fines and court proceedings against his law firms that he's associated with, and personal tax debts and so forth. I mean, this is a house of cards that they've set up. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. President Trump was in New York yesterday, and he was there with the ICE head, the Immigration Control and Enforcement. They were taking on Nancy Pelosi and the media over all of this defense of MS-13, the way the media took President Trump's comments out of context to deliberately lie about it, to say that he was calling all immigrants animals when he was clearly responding to the concerns of a sheriff in the sanctuary state of California, saying, what are we going to do about MS-13? Because I'm very concerned about this. They should be concerned about this. There's an article on Yahoo about the Mexican mafia is running the L.A. County jails. They're running the L.A. County jails. Listen to this. The L.A. County jails are being run by the sheriff, technically, but the Mexican mafia wielded the power in the underworld behind the bars, says Yahoo. This is coming out of the AP. They said the organization, made up of leaders from various Latino gangs, operates like an illegal government. They collect taxes. Collect taxes on smuggled drugs. Yeah, you know what? This is one of the arguments against drug prohibition. The number of people who die of drug overdoses, just in federal prisons, let alone county jails like this. If you can't, by force and by law enforcement, keep drugs out of the hands of people in jails, how are you going to be able to control this out in the general population? What kind of a society are we going to have? It's going to have to be worse than a federal prison if we're going to really be able to solve the problem by law enforcement. Drug abuse is a problem. But it cannot be solved by law enforcement. Every problem that we have in society can't be solved by law enforcement. And this is another example of it. So you got the Mexican mafia collecting taxes on drugs that are smuggled into the prison. They're ordering hits on people that don't follow their rules, even calling the shots on street crime outside of the prison. And federal prosecutors said they have now charged 83 members and associates, and their clout has been diminished. And I would ask, how does that work exactly? Because you put charges against these guys, but they're already in prison. So what good does that do? I don't really understand how that's, you've identified them and you've given them additional charges, but these guys are running this massive criminal operation from inside prison. So what are you going to do now that they're in prison? Anyway, federal racketeering conspiracies, alleged drug dealing, extortion, violent assault, even murder inside there. They say these Mexican mafia members and associates working together to control criminal activity within the L.A. County jails have become their own entity or enterprise. They effectively function as an illegal government. Folks, this is the same thing that is happening in Mexico itself. They take over the government functions there. This has been going on in Mexico for quite some time. This is a spreading, metastasizing cancer. And just as cancer is fed by certain substances, let's say like sugar, for example, really does feed a cancer once it's in your body. The war on drugs and prohibition is feeding the cancer of these massive Mexican cartels, and not just Mexican, but MS-13, which is not Mexican. It's coming from El Salvador. The drug war has created these entities, and the drug war is feeding these entities. And just as they have taken over the government in Mexico, they are taking over the government in the jails. They're going to be taking over the government pretty soon at all levels in our country. You know, there's more people killed in Mexico than in the drug war than are killed in Syria and Afghanistan. The only place where more people are being killed in the world is Syria. That's the only place where more people are being killed than in Mexico. And in Mexico, they do it retail. They don't do it wholesale. Not massive bombing campaigns that are killing these people. They're doing it one-on-one with machetes, hacking people to death, hanging them from bridges and so forth. That is what this war on drugs and these drug cartels are going to be bringing to America. They're already taking over our prisons. How much longer before they take over our government? As I've said many times, the embrace of MS-13 did not begin this last week. It began immediately after President Trump was elected president. You had people in California saying, we've got to purge the gang lists because we don't want these people who are listed as gang members in California. We don't want them deported. President Trump will deport them. They've been protecting these people since before President Trump was sworn in, immediately after he won the election. And so President Trump went to New York yesterday, and he had this to say.
Crippling loopholes in our laws have enabled MS-13 gang members and other criminals to infiltrate our communities. And Democrats in Congress refuse to close these loopholes, including the disgraceful practice known as catch and release. That's you catch them, you write up a little piece of paper that's meaningless, and then you release them. And they go all throughout the country, and they're supposed to come back for trials. They never come back, or very rarely. It's the rare person that comes back. Democrats have to abandon their resistance to border security so that we can support law enforcement and save innocent lives. And I noticed recently where Democrats, Nancy Pelosi as an example, are trying to defend MS-13 gang members. I called them animals the other day, and
I was met with rebuke. They said, they're people. They're not people. These are animals. And we have to be very, very tough.
That's right. And Politico pointed out why Long Island still loves President Trump. It's because they have seen Long Island be swamped by illegal immigration. There are 400 MS-13 members in the county that my wife grew up in on Long Island. And they're saying that Suffolk County increased by 40% in terms of illegal immigrants. They understand what this is going to mean for them. They have seen the crime increase in the communities. And it's not just the people who were living there before. People who are trying to escape MS-13, trying to get their kids away from the gangs in El Salvador, come all the way up to New York, to Long Island, and then see their kids hacked to death because we don't have any border protection. You know, we had Betsy DeVos being grilled by a congresswoman yesterday from New York. Adriano Espaillat, I think is the way you pronounce her name. She said, if a principal, this is what the Democrat congresswoman said from New York, if a principal or a teacher finds out that a certain child is undocumented, we can't say illegal here, right? Undocumented. Or his or her family members are undocumented. We must do whatever it takes to ensure the student's safety and protection from the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, she said. And she said, I am outraged and highly concerned. Following comments made by Secretary Betsy DeVos during yesterday's Education and Workforce Committee hearing, where she asked her at the hearing whether schools should report undocumented students to federal authorities, to which Betsy DeVos said, that's a school decision. It's a local community decision. Well, no, actually, it's not. It is the federal government that is tasked with enforcing our laws. And they conveniently ignore the fact that these are foreign citizens. We have another Democrat congressman from Arizona saying, schools are free and public. You don't check documentation. These are kids, and they're entitled to a free public education. Even if they come here from a foreign country, they're entitled to have a free education at the expense of American taxpayers. That's what they're telling you. We'll be right back on David Knight.
Keep on lying. Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I want to get through the immigration stuff and the visit that President Trump had to New York. Quickly, because I've got some news on MK Ultra that is coming out of Canada. Very important. I don't want to get to that, but I think it's also important for us to understand really where the Democrats are on this stuff. As we look at these hearings with Nancy DeVos and the outrage from one Democrat congressperson after the other, saying if a principal or teacher finds out that a certain child is undocumented, his or her family members are undocumented, we have to ensure their safety. And schools are free and public, and don't check documentation. These are kids. They're entitled to a free public education at your expense. And we have to understand that, and I think a lot of Americans are starting to understand this, even though many in the Republican Party, including President Trump, don't, that DACA is merely a dream of the Democrats and the globalists. DACA is not our dream. DACA, as a matter of fact, is our nightmare if you're an American. DACA will destroy the American dream of owning a home. It'll downsize your home because we have to pay for the taxes to educate these children who come here from foreign countries, these foreign citizens who come here to be educated and demand a free education at our expense. You have these Democrats in New Jersey and New York, the governors there, saying we're going to give free college tuition to foreign citizens who didn't even bother to fill out any paperwork or apply for immigration here. They just come here and demand free stuff from us. We're going to give them free college tuition. Not you people who are Americans. You don't get free college tuition. Isn't that amazing? They're not going to give free tuition to New York children or to New Jersey children or to children from other states who are going to come there. They're going to pay even higher price. They're going to pay out-of-state tuition. But if you come from out of the country to do this, and this, I think, folks, is the final stage of globalism. How they try to bankrupt us. As I said, when we look at Spygate, this thing has been playing out very, very slowly. Now, if it's successful, it's going to go from gradually to rapidly, and you're going to see these people collapse. But the same thing can happen to us economically, because that original quote was talking about an individual who had quite a bit of money, and people said, how could you have gone bankrupt? They said, well, gradually at first and then rapidly. What they have done with the warfare state and the welfare state is to get us involved in a lot of wars. At first, these wars were for American foreign policy. Now they have become a globalist agenda. So now the globalists are telling us where we're going to go to war and how long we're going to stay there, which is forever. And you look at the welfare state, which is also being, that's the two legs. You know, we got the cartoon from Ben Garrison that was so popular, become so iconic, the March of Tyranny, left, right, you know, take away your freedoms one at a time, one party at a time. You alternate it left and right each election and so forth. Well, we have the welfare state and the warfare state. That's part of that left-right march to tyranny, but it's also a left-right march to bankruptcy. The warfare state and the welfare state will bankrupt us. And the way that it goes from a gradual bankruptcy to a rapid bankruptcy is when the globalists get involved. And they turn our wars into global worldwide wars. You want to talk about World War III? Folks, we're in World War III. How many countries do we have to be fighting simultaneously to not call it a world war? And when you look at the welfare state, when you take the American welfare state, which was already unsustainable, and they knew this, they had economists who were wargaming this and saying, look, the way we destroy America economically so that we can create our socialist system is to accelerate this by expanding the welfare state. And we do that by bringing in people from all over the world to live off the American welfare state. So it's not just going to be Americans living off of this bankrupt welfare state. We're going to bring in foreign citizens to do it at the same time. And so that's why, you know, yes, MS-13 is an immediate and obvious threat to us, and the Democrats won't even come against MS-13. But just as big of a threat to us is DACA and this Democrat dream, because this is the Democrat dream of destroying our country and building their socialist dystopia on the ruins of it. Here is the head of ICE, Thomas Homan, talking to these Congress people who say, don't call us racist for enforcing your laws. Here's the head of ICE.
First of all, no one on this panel is anti-immigrant. We're law enforcement officers enforcing law that you all enacted. So to sit there and say that we're anti-immigrants is wrong. We are enforcing laws. If you think it's okay to enter this country illegally and they shouldn't be arrested, that's just wrong. The laws clearly state and you enter the country legally, it's a crime.
That's
and
right.
No one's up here saying all illegal aliens are criminals. A certain percentage of them are criminals. They commit yet another offense after they're here. I've said many times, I certainly understand the plight of these people, and I feel bad for some of these people. But I have a job to do. I have to enforce law and uphold the oath I took to enact the laws enacted by you, Congress.
And when they come in and they're underage, they get a free education. That's what these Democrats are so outraged about. Well, we demand they get a free education. Well, they come in, they say, well, they're only violating the immigration laws, and they've only got MS-13 tattoos on them, which is what they're saying in New York. And they say, well, we'll keep watching them, and hopefully we can catch them in the middle of committing a crime. Because we know they're here illegally and violating those laws, and we know that they're part of MS-13. And then they also know that MS-13 said because of DACA and the announcement by the Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, the Obama administration, that they're not going to enforce the borders, they're not going to enforce the laws. Because of that, we're going to send even more of you who are underage to America because we know they won't do anything about it, even if you got MS-13 tattoos, all of you. So yesterday, we had the same individual, Thomas Homan, head of ICE, the director of ICE, there with President Trump in New York talking about MS-13. Here's that clip.
Down there to meet with the federal police and the prosecutors who we've totally vetted. They are part of our vetted unit and we've trained them. We went to one of the prisons down there where 70% of the population in that prison MS-13 gang members. These are the worst of the worst, and because of ICE's work along the Bureau and Department of Justice, our intelligence and our evidence supplied to the officials in El Salvador put most of them people in that prison, which, if you think about it, we prevented many of these people from getting to the United States and took them out right there in El Salvador. We'll continue to do that. We'll continue to work with El Salvadoran and Central American partners to play the away game and stop most of them before they get there. I can tell you that ICE is not going to stop making this a priority until we totally dismantle this organization. We won't rest until that's happened. So I want to thank you again for your leadership. ICE is on the job. ICE isn't going away. New York,
despite your governor's comments about ICE. ICE has done a lot for this state. We'll continue doing a lot for this state. We've taken nearly 5,000 criminal aliens off the street in New York, and we're not going anywhere. We're going to be here and do our job and try to make this the safest place that the communities can have. Thank you very much.
All right, so that was yesterday in New York. You know, we had an article earlier this week, and the left was wringing their hands and saying, look at this, Trump has already undone the Obama legacy. Well, he's done a lot of very important things to derail it, but it's not completely gone yet. You know, they would be absolutely, the Republican Party would be absolutely untouchable in this election if they would deliver on some things that we've been voting for them for several elections to do. But the problem is that we got a lot of people who are running the Republican Party who don't want to get rid of Obamacare, who don't want to get rid of DACA, who don't want to protect the border, in spite of the fact that's been the major issues that they've campaigned on in the past. Here's an example. The U.S. will blow $700 billion on Obamacare subsidies in 2018. It's going to estimate the spending $700 billion in subsidies to help people under the age of 65. So I thought Obamacare was gone. No, never did anything about it. And of course, the Congress has continually blocked that. I think the Justice Department, as we pointed out before, they could do things to unfund this because it was never funded legally. See, Obama did a net asset sweep out of Ginnie Mae and Freddie Mac to fund this. So you could just say it's already been found unconstitutional by a judge. So why is the Justice Department still appealing that decision? Just say, we're not going to do that anymore. Just cut out that subsidy, but they don't do it. The DACA order is simply that. It's an order. And just like the Paris Climate Accord that was signed by Obama without being ratified by the Congress, just say, we're not going to do that. Just like Obama's Iran deal, you could say that. They would be unassailable. So they keep tying themselves to people like Eric Schneiderman, Hillary Clinton, Michael Wolff, Stormy Daniels. You know, Eric Schneiderman is, they're looking at prosecuting him for these crimes that have surfaced. I mean, that's how desperate they are. They're going to use a charm offensive using the CIA, NSA, and FBI officials. That's not a charm offensive, folks. That's just offensive. They don't have much for this election. Welcome back. You know, yesterday morning I talked about the fact there were rumors circulating that the NFL was considering penalizing teams 15 yards if they disrespected the flag. They'd have the choice of staying in the locker room or coming out for the national anthem. If they had players who disrespected the national anthem, they would be penalized 15 yards. Later yesterday, they came out and said they unanimously approved a new policy which basically said individuals or entire teams can choose to remain in the locker room. However, if they come out and have any kind of mode of disrespect, then the team will be fined, not penalized 15 yards. Because like I said yesterday, well, so what difference does that make? Each team's going to get a 15-yard penalty. So what? I mean, just one momentary issue. But they can fine the teams. I don't know how much the fines are going to be. You've now had the owner of the Jets come out and say, well, I'm not going to penalize any players because they also gave the teams the option of fining individual players who did things that are disrespectful. See, this is a difference, and this is where the left and the right are not meeting on this. You got a lot of people out there saying, well, this is their free speech. They're engaged in a protest. That's not the way the vast majority of Americans who have caused the NFL's ratings to plummet see this. They see this as simply disrespect. But I got to say, that the biggest disrespect that I see from the NFL, and I said it yesterday when I was talking about this, is not even the national anthem. I see the disrespect from the NFL in the sense that we have to subsidize stadiums to the tunes of several billion dollars per stadium. We got one in L.A. that's coming in for $4 billion. And we add in the ancillary costs, it's going to be more like $5 or $6 billion. The previous record for that was $2 billion. I think that's outrageous. That individuals in that community and businesses in that community should have to subsidize these billionaire owners. I find that to be the ultimate disrespect. But if you want more disrespect from the billionaires, you got Michael Bloomberg showing his full, I know better than you, nanny attitude. He went to the IMF And he pushed, as pointed out on WND, they had a great headline on this. Billionaire Bloomberg endorses taking money from poor people. Why? Because they're too stupid to make their own decisions. He actually said this. He says, so higher taxes should have a bigger impact on their behavior and how they deal with themselves. So I listen to people say, oh, we don't want to tax the poor. Well, we want to tax the poor to live longer so they can get an education, enjoy life. And that's why you do want to do exactly what a lot of people say you don't want to do. They're not making good decisions for their life. So we'll take their money and their freedom away from them, and we will make the decisions for them. These are the people who are going to give you universal basic income. They're going to take care of you. Don't worry. Universal basic income. It's going to be very basic. It's going to be poverty level, folks. All right, I want to get, this is a story I've been wanting to get to all day today. I've got so much stuff about surveillance. You know, when we look at the hashtag Spygate, and the other one that's been, I think that's going to be huge, and the other one that's been really big over the last year or so is the hashtag Me Too. I think we need to combine those two things together, and we need to come up with a hashtag Spy Me Too. Because they've been spying on me too for a long time, and I'm sick and tired of that too. They're not just spying on President Trump, and they're not just overthrowing elections. You know, the elections were your choice, right? And they want to overthrow your choice. But they also want to spy on you and know everything about you so they can manipulate you, just like Bloomberg wants to manipulate you. It's not just taking away your money so they can manipulate you. It's also knowing how they can lie to you, how they can continually, you know, make little adjustments to their narrative so they can get you to think the way that they want you to think as well. And so now we got the ACLU out there very concerned about Amazon. Amazon is pushing this affordable mass surveillance. They've got a new system that looks exactly like what you see in China, where they are creating a massive database so they can do instantaneous surveillance of everybody. The problem is that just like the NFL, the ACLU comes out and says, well, they're going to use this to come after people of color. Come on. It's not just people of color. I'm all with reforming the police and the way they interact with the community to make sure that they don't commit these crimes. Because they're not just committing them against people of color. They're committing them against all kinds of individuals. When you've got bad policies and bad individuals in the police department, they need to be changed. And when you make it about just one group of people, and you make it about a minority, that means that the majority aren't going to get behind this. As a matter of fact, what it'll do is if the ACLU is successful in this, they will block any movement to stop this mass surveillance, just like they have been successful in blocking any movement to correct the police. They create a war between the black community and the blue community. Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, the two sides fight. So who are you going to support? You're going to support these people who are rioting in the streets, or you're going to support the police or whatever? And so then people fall in line behind the police instead of reforming the police. They'll do the same thing with surveillance. That's what's going to happen with the ACLU and the left getting into this. And it talked about this the other day, how the Defense Department has already got this project where they're going to look at your hand pressure, your wrist pressure, how you're walking and so forth. It's exactly the same thing that they're doing in China. And once they put this in phones, folks, it's going to be for everybody. And that's what they're talking about, doing it with everybody. Mike Meharry, who I've talked to many times here, who's with the 10th Amendment Center, he wrote an article about how the feds are using transportation funds right now to spy on you. They have the TSA combining with Homeland Security, combining with surveillance cameras and all these mass transit areas. But, folks, that's not the big issue. Yes, we can see how they think and we can see how they operate. These agencies are combining together and then they're working with private companies who are going to make a lot of money. And so the bottom line is that in Virginia and Richmond and so forth, they are working together. As he sums it up, he says, the Department of Homeland Security and TSA are developing a massive, intrusive surveillance network built on America's transportation system. And you've got a private, nonprofit organization that's administering the system, and a private company that's going to actually run it. It's crony tyranny. They are doing it, however. You know, nobody wants to ride public transportation. Nobody wants to ride these, you know, these monorails or the buses or any of this other stuff that they put in the cities. I've talked about that, how it's totally collapsing. Even in cities like Austin, we have massive increase in population, or Charlotte, the ridership on the mass transportation that these people want to control is plummeting. So they've got to get mass transportation. They got to get rid of the cars, and they got to put you in their controlled little robo taxis where they can tax you every mile that you go, and they can track everything that you do. But we can see that it's already happening here with their little failed public transportation systems already. And it's very crude, because what they're doing is, right now, they're just doing it for this public transportation segment that nobody's using, and they're using cameras and so forth. But they're going to be able to use your phone. And see, when we look at this story from Zero Hedge, you're saying, for the first time, Americans are more likely to pay their cell phone bill over their car loan, because the cell phone has become more important to this generation of kids than the automobile has, and they are going to use it. It is going to be Big Brother, just as the NSA put out, this is something that surfaced in a German paper, Der Spiegel. Wasn't widely reported here in the United States. The three slides saying, who would have thought in 1984, and they show the iconic 1984 commercial from Apple. Who would have thought in 1984 that this, and then they show Steve Jobs holding up an iPhone, that this would become Big Brother. There you go, right there. Thanks. And that the public would line up to pay for it themselves. And that they would value it over their ability to move about freely, which is what this current generation does. So where is this going? You know, we look at all of this. It's all about activity-based intelligence, human domain analytics. Once they know everywhere that you're going, they can totally dominate the human domain. That was the purpose, I believe, of Jade Helm. Their motto was mastering the human domain. That's part of their geospatial intelligence. We don't have any time left for this. I will get to this tomorrow, but just to give you an idea of where we're going tomorrow on the program, you've got Canadian victims of the CIA's MKUltra program. They were brainwashing people in Canada. And in Canada, there is going to be maybe a little bit of movement, a little bit of exposure to this. We're going to get a little bit of truth dropped on us about this. One of the things that they were doing, I'll just read you a quick excerpt here. The guy who supervised all this was Dr. Ewan Cameron. He was director of the psychiatric hospital that ran this MKUltra stuff between the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. He conducted depatterning and psychic driving experiments that attempted to erase a patient's memories and even attempted to reprogram them with new thoughts. Does this sound familiar? Do you remember when I talked to you about the snail memories about a week ago? And how they're so proud of the fact that they can put new memories into snails? We got DARPA out there. We got the $200 million plus brain project that Obama had. What are they trying to do? The same stuff as MKUltra. They're just not using LSD and other things like that, other psychiatric conditions. But they still say, oh, we're going to remove those painful memories for PTSD patients. We're going to implant new memories. We're going to transfer memories. Nothing has changed except the technology. We still have the same CIA that we did 50, 60, 70 years ago.